My name is Maximus Decimus Meridius.
I am Iron Man.
Hello, hello, and welcome back to the Post Credit Podcast. I am your host, Eric Italiano, senior writer at BroBible.com. Today, as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Kate Onder, who you can find writing about video games over at comicbook.com. Today, I have an interview with Asteroid City stars Scarlett Johansson and Jason Schwartzman. That will be at the end of the show. We will also be breaking down the first episode of Secret Invasion, which has been making tons of headlines for reasons other than the show itself. But first, we are going to be reviewing Extraction 2, which hit Netflix last Friday. I had a chance to share some of my big picture thoughts last week. So, Kate, I would love to hear what you thought about what is probably going to wind up being in Netflix's top 10-ish most all-time viewed films.
Yeah, this movie fucking rips. Like, I enjoyed the first one a decent amount. And I think that was probably because it was like COVID, like peak COVID, where there was nothing going on. You couldn't go to the movie theaters. This was like the best thing you could get. And the second one just ups the ante. Like, I was enjoying it. And then that Molotov hits Chris Hemsworth's fucking hands and he starts beating the shit out of people with flaming hands. I'm like, this is the best movie ever made. Like, it doesn't get any better than this. You know, you can say all you want about how, you know, gimmicky the 20 minute one shot, quote unquote, is, but it works. It works. That's not easy to do what they did. Like, even if it is a bunch of stuff stitched together, that shit is sick. And Chris Hemsworth is an awesome actor.
I feel like saying that a one take is a gimmick is more cliched than one takes themselves are.
Sure. No, yeah, like, I think I agree.
Because look, like, you could, I don't really understand any criticisms of it except for the fact that it's not a genuine one take, which, okay, like, sure. Fine. If you're like a hardcore filmmaking snob like that, then
you love semantics.
Right, sure. But yeah, from a pure action execution standpoint, I'm not really sure what more you could want from something in this genre. And that's why I think it's pretty incredible that Netflix has found themselves with this franchise. Because when you think about, like, the money invested in films like Red Notice, or what else have they? They had that Ryan Reynolds film from
Six Underground.
Right, that one. And they have tried to immerse themselves or build their own.
The Gray Man.
That's the one, The Gray Man. You know, they have been trying to engineer an action franchise from scratch for years now. And the fact that it came from Extraction, which is a movie that audience tested in a vague ending because they weren't sure in the first film, because they weren't sure how people would receive it, to now it's at the point where, like, one of the big announcements at Netflix's Comic-Con was the third film's coming. So yeah. I think that just speaks to the quality of craftsmanship of this film. And that's why I think that Extraction 2 is, in a weird way, I think, like, the next evolution of the action genre. That's not me saying that I think it's better than John Wick, which I think is the current, like, championship belt holder when it comes to these type of films. But my point is that it's sort of building on what John Wick has done. So if you rewind the clock back 10 years to films like The Raid, right? You know what? Let's go back even further, right? The 2000s started and the action genre was largely changed by the Bourne films, where it was, we're going to strip this down. It's going to be shaky cam. It's going to be gritty. It's going to be right in your face. It's going to be quick cutting. And at the time that worked because it felt realer. And then you saw that in things like Batman Begins and The Dark Knight. And then you get to like 10 years ago where we get The Raid. And The Raid basically said, all right, we're going to give you stunning fight choreography, which the shit in the Bourne films was good. But what The Raid did was, we're going to present it as clearly and as cleanly as possible.
It enhances the danger, right? Because you have to use your imagination a bit when it's quick cutting, right? You're kind of filling in the gaps there, but you're seeing people, for the most part, get really hurt. Like, they're doing it as safely as possible, but those guys are coming away with some fucking bruises.
It also, I think, adds to the, I want to say that the Bourne films feel more realistic in terms of, like, oh, if you were in a fight, this is how it would feel, very frenetic, very chaotic. But with what we've seen over the last 10 years, it's craft is of such a high level that it's become balletic, where mm-hmm. you are able to see the symphony that is every punch and block and kick. So The Raid did that. And then John Wick came along 5 years or so past that and said, all right, we're going to do the same thing, but instead we're going to put a movie star you love in that role. So mm-hmm. now we've got the beautiful fight scenes with an action star that we love. But with Extraction, they're taking what Wick did, but instead of using an actor that we love, which again, like Keanu Reeves is now iconic and he was before Wick. But when Wick came out, people were like, you know, Reeves is kind of cooked. I don't know who wants this, who needs this.
A direct to DVD kind of thing, right?
Right. So it wasn't what Extraction is quite doing, which what Extraction did was, all right, we're going to do what The Raid did well, and we're going to do what John Wick did well, but we're going to fucking have Thor star in it.
Right. Yeah.
And that feels like an evolution where it's like, okay, movie stars are now starring in these stripped down action thrillers, which, although I'm saying it's an advancement of the genre, is conversely a reversion to what action films used to be, where just absolutely diesel dudes like Arnold and Sly would take on these larger than life hero roles. And just, we would just let them loose on bad guys for 2 hours. And that's why I think that these films are working so well, is that they're balancing the old and the new.
Yeah. And I think what Extraction does is a lot of the recent action movies that have come in the wake of John Wick have tried to emulate John Wick with the neon colors, the club music, and all that kind of stuff. It doesn't work as well. You need to find your own entry point in there. And I think Extraction is just like, someone described it as like, this feels like a movie from like, you know, 2011 that, you know, would probably have someone a little less
caliber. I'd go back even further than that. I'm sure. Saying like 80s, 90s. Yeah,
definitely. And it just, they've found a way to, again, back to what you're saying, the craft. They took that concept of the action star. I mean, like, those movies are, we love those movies, but I mean, you go back
and watch. But it's like Arnold from like 30 feet away. It's like rocket launcher. And then he's throwing a couple punches and then they'll cut. It's
a little cheesy. It's a little corny, but we love it. But now they found a way to take the stuff that we love about the John Wicks, the Raids, the enhancement of that danger and the dance element of it all, and put it into something with the big bulky action man that has a fucking LMG taking on helicopters like he's in fucking Doom or something crazy. You know, it's like, that's what I love.
And just to the point of the craft, like that sort of Chris Hemsworth fights a chopper thing, you know, you put that in a The Rock film, right? And that likely comes off as absurd. But this is because you have belief in the director and the franchise. You're like, yes, this is absurd, but I'm fucking in. This is absurd in the right way. Because Tyler Rake, you know what? I would believe that he could
do that. His name's Tyler Rake. Like, that's the kind of guy that's picking up a machine gun to fucking fight helicopters. Absolutely.
And then I brought this up in the interview with Sam Hargrave, the directors of the films. It's like, yes, they made things bigger and better, but Rake himself feels like a more human character. They elevate the side to Nick, and it's either Fez or Faz or something, which gives Tyler Rake something to defend other than his own life, which he didn't really seem to care about that much in the first film to begin with. So it is an elevation of not just what you're showing up for, which is i.e. the action, but it is a better story, a better movie, a better performed film. So with all that said, it's no surprise that Extraction 3 has been confirmed. Cade, what would you like to see from this? I think I trust Hargrave to not go the fast route and to do something too big and too wild. Yeah. So I'm not going to speak to what I want to see in terms of action. I will say, though, what the franchise has not done yet is cast a star as the heavy. You know, the first film, that guy that sort of Rake goes one-on-one with and eventually teams up with, he's badass. And in this, you know, this Eastern Bloc villain in this film is also a menacing presence. But to really hit the heights of action genre icon status, I think you need to have an iconic villain that you could legitimately believe, oh, Rake might lose this one. Now, I think I stole this from either you or B, but someone suggested Henry Cavill.
Yeah, it must have been Brandon. Because it was
Brandon, maybe? Well, B, shouts to you, but I sent it out on Twitter. Sorry, because I don't know. But yeah, I feel like something like that, right? And especially since Cavill is in the Netflix family as is, I feel like if you go into the third film with Rake as the lead, Elba as like the handler slash maybe, you know, bad guy twist, and then Henry Cavill as the heavy, then you have elevated the franchise in a new way again.
Yeah, I would love to see that. It's hard to say if they would do it or if Henry Cavill would do it, since he already kind of did that with Mission. But like, regardless, I'm there day one if he does it. I don't know what I want to see, like, because like you said, the action is like, I trust them implicitly to do right by all of us with that. Maybe just throw in some fucking Metallica, you know, just some like, good music,
needle drops.
But
that would feel, you know, coming off the Flash. I'm done with fucking needle drops, to be honest with you. Like, I don't. And I feel like that would just be very outside the tone of this franchise. That is now,
the only thing I have to say.
Now, a tweet that you had is what inspired me to put this prompt in here. Yes. So I will let you start. What do you want to see Hargrave do next? Because we know that he's going to direct Extraction 3. This feels like a trilogy franchise. Hemsworth is pushing 40. You figure they get the third one out within the next 3 years.
Is he in his 30s?
I think he's like 39. He might be like 40. Yeah, he's right
way
there.
Younger than I expected, just because he's been around.
How old is he?
39.
Yeah, okay. So the way Sam Hargrave described Hemsworth's feeling about the franchise is that he loves the fact that he has a non-MCU thing going for him. Yeah. So as long as Hemsworth is down, I think that they'll keep making these.
Fuck yeah.
But let's just assume that Hargrave taps out at the third, right?
Sure.
Go ahead. What would you like to see him do next?
I would love to see him do a Call of Duty movie. They've been kicking the idea around of a Call of Duty movie for the longest time. It only makes sense. I've talked about a Call of Duty movie on here before, probably. But like, it's a very cinematic franchise. It pulls from Michael Bay and all these great action directors. So it only makes sense for them to take that and then apply it to either a miniseries or a movie, whatever it may be. And this guy has the juice for it. He has like the right amount of like tacticalness, you know, so it's still a little grounded, but also the scale is big enough for you to be like, yeah, this is real fucking cinema right here. We are, you know, put the adrenaline into my veins, pump me full of it. And even like Captain Price is a character in the games and he's British, but I know Hemsworth is Australian, but I was like, man, I would love to see this guy as Captain Price, or even Henry Cavill. He fits that. I mean, you take the mustache and all that stuff, he fits. He's British. Well,
Henry Cavill is sort of doing something like that. Guy Ritchie's next film, I think it's The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare. I think it's like a World War One or Two film where he seems to be taking on that sort of commander-esque role. It's funny that you bring up COD, because I was going through our old tweets. I punched in Hargrave at Postgrad Pod, and I really wish I had done this before I spoke to Sam. But he was previously announced as being attached to two Jake Gyllenhaal projects, one of which would see Jake play Medal of Honor recipient John Chapman in a film called Combat Control.
Is it a true story?
I assume so.
If there's a name.
True. Right, so that's a true story. Obviously, Call of Duty is not, but that's basically, do we want to IP this or not? You know what I mean? And then the other Jake Gyllenhaal project that he was attached to was an adaptation of the graphic novel Prophet, quote, John Prophet volunteers for a German experiment during World War II. After a bombing buries him alive and traps him underground for 20 years, he reawakens in 1965.
That sounds cool.
And he was also linked to a project called Stay Frosty with Idris Elba. After surviving a bullet to the head, a man must figure out who wants him dead and why, and needs to stop the assassin while still making it home to spend Christmas with his son.
That sounds now fun.
I really wish I had fucking researched this before I spoke to him, because I would have loved to have been like, yo, what's good with these? Because I've not heard a word about these since.
Do you, you don't remember off the top of your head when these were announced?
I just Googled, they were 2021. So like, I guess when they weren't as sure that like Extraction was going to turn into a franchise, I'm not really sure, but our Twitter account reported on him being attached to three different films, none of which are going to be his next film.
Right. Yeah. I assume Extraction 3 is probably the next one,
yeah,
right?
For yeah. Sure.
So, yeah, that is all of those sound really fucking cool. And he sounds like the guy to do those and make them fun. Yeah, I'd love to see those. Jake Gyllenhaal and Sam Hargrave would be a match made in heaven. I mean, we love Jake Gyllenhaal here on the Post-Cred Pod. And
yeah, we do. And I feel like Sam could be his stunt double.
Did you watch The Covenant yet?
No.
Yeah, you should. That movie's great.
Is it streaming or
I believe it was on Amazon in like Canada when it came out. It didn't have a theatrical release there, so it's probably going to be on Amazon at some point this year in America. I'll check.
Gotcha.
He's got the juice. This is a guy that's going to be, you know, who's the David Leitch, right?
Yeah.
I don't feel like he really took off. Like, he did Bullet Train, I think. Yeah.
So he did Atomic Blonde, which
people
really liked. But yeah, since then, I feel like he hasn't. I feel like it's since become clear that Chad Stahelski is the guy.
Yes, exactly what I was going for. It's like, doesn't feel like anyone's really gotten their their jumping off point quite like Chad has. And I would like to see more guys like that. And I think Sam Hargrave has the potential for that.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Let's take a quick break. And when we come back, we are going to break down the premiere episode of Secret Invasion.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
All right, folks, we are back. We are breaking down the first episode of Secret Invasion, which hit Disney Plus on Wednesday, June 21st. But before we talk about the episode itself, I want to talk about the hype and buildup going into it. This is a show that stars Samuel Jackson, Ben Mendelsohn, Olivia Colman, Emilia Clarke, Kingsley Benadire, I'm not sure which it is. And I feel like in terms of general cultural conversation, this might be the least hyped, talked about MCU Disney Plus show yet.
I will say they had like a really cool marketing campaign.
Did they though?
Like, it sucked in terms of probably reach, but like the idea of like, oh, you know, go to this website and there's like a big conspiracy. I'm like, I like that stuff. That stuff is cool. I like little ARGs. I knew it was coming out sometime this summer. I was like, I don't know when the fuck it's coming out. I didn't know it was coming out till this week until yesterday.
I literally hit you up. I was like, oh, by the way, Secret Invasion tomorrow.
I was like, oh yeah, I guess I'll watch that. It's just like,
I know it's right because the cast alone and the premise, you're like, fuck yeah, dude. Like there was a thought out there post Guardians 3 with this being the next thing. There was a moment in time where we were like, are we back? Are we fucking back?
Yeah.
I don't think we're back.
Yeah, combine this and then what's the next thing? Loki is in like October and
the Marvels
in November. Is none of this gets me very excited.
Is Disney Plus to blame? Like, is the whole concept caving in on itself?
Because I think so.
Even Loki season 2, which is consensus to be the best MCU Disney Plus show so far, is a dicey prospect right now.
Yes. I the fucking prospect of Disney Plus's whole thing has been pretty dead for me for over a year, if not longer than that, probably since we started doing the show.
I think what that they failed to realize is that the key to creating a backlog of just endless shit is having it not be new. The problem is that they are trying to invent a backlog of stuff. It's like, because you think, right? It's like, why wouldn't you tune into a Marvel show with Samuel and all them? And in hindsight, it's like, yeah, of course I'll throw that on. But in the moment, it's Marvel's big thing. This is what they've got to sell us. And so I think there's a disconnect of trying to fill out their catalog, but also make compelling blockbuster in the moment content. And that has been why I think this experiment has failed and why something like WandaVision, when I don't want to say the gimmick, but the nuance of it was fresh, right? But now that it's sort of a well-worn thing, these don't feel like events. They feel like stuff that's just meant to exist on Disney Plus in the background for you to find years later, but you're watching it week to week.
Yeah, and it doesn't help that Marvel, this is the problem with creating a cinematic universe. You can only, as things get bigger and bigger and start to expand and you start to have these different characters in different corners and you're starting to do these different ideas that don't necessarily all overlap, you can't dedicate all of your time. So like the fucking Skrulls thing was introduced in like, what, 2019? I think that's when Captain Marvel came out, right? 2019?
Yeah.
And then, or maybe, no, was that before Endgame?
Yes.
Or,
yes.
Okay.
Because she showed up in that film.
That's right. And then, her little pager was in Infinity War at the end, but she wasn't introduced yet.
Right.
The Skrulls were introduced in 2019. It is 2023, and we have not seen them outside of a post-credit scene in Far From Home in 2019 as well. They have just completely left those things to the side. We have I completely forgot. Like, I thought they were like cool. I thought that was the whole thing, was like there was kind of a twist there. Like,
in we were bros.
Yeah, like literally, I thought, like, I remember in that movie, like, because the Skrulls are iconic villains in Marvel comics, but then in that movie I was like, oh, they're like not that bad, I guess, or something like that. And then I've completely put that movie out of my memory, so I may be completely wrong, but it was just like, I don't even know what the fuck's going on. Why are they here? Why are they so angry? Like, what is the whole point of this? And it's just, they have created this universe where they can't expand on their ideas quickly enough, I think, too. So these things just get drawn out. Is that, am I making any sense?
Well, in a way, right? You're saying that they're trying to pick up a plot thread from years ago that they haven't touched on, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
What movie did Nick Fury show up in the post-credit scene where it's like, oh, he's in space?
That was Far From Home.
Oh, that was Far From Home. Okay. Yeah. So in a sense, you're right. But on the flip side of that, I think that a problem it currently faces is that it feels very rushed, right?
Yeah.
The world-ending Skrull events, like, they're trying to tell you, hey, if the Skrulls pull this off, we're doomed. That's meant to be the dramatic engine of the show, is introduced and explained in a 5-minute kitchen table scene where they do the classic cliche computer screen where they're like, here's the villains, here's the locations, here's what they want. That feels more AI than the fucking AI generated credits. Okay. Yeah. So they are doing that. And this is one of the first scenes of the show when you have all these fucking awesome actors sharing a screen. This is one of the first scenes. And they're doing that to catch people up who aren't invested in years worth, like you just said, of plot details and Skrull movements and MCU lore. And so that is why it feels so dulled, rounded, muted, gray. There's just something about this premiere to me that lacked energy.
Yeah. And it's not even that I'm not necessarily invested in the idea of Skrulls. It's just like, there in that time, since the Skrulls were introduced, we had the fucking conclusion of Thanos. Like, that was a month after Captain Marvel came out, right? It was the whole conclusion of that. Then we had the introduction of Kang earlier this year. We've had some other like miscellaneous things that are setting up other little things with fucking Hercules and whatever the hell Charlize Theron is doing in Doctor Strange and tons of other fucking shit. And I'm just like, there is so many different.
Hold on. Let's just throw out more. Harry Styles at the end of Eternals. Brett Goldstein at the end of Thor 4.
Hercules, that's what I'm saying. Yeah.
Who is fucking driving the ship right now?
I don't know. It's like, and I don't have a problem with like not having answers right now, but they are setting up so many different things, planting so many different seeds. It's like all these seeds are planting different fucking forests. Like, that is the whole thing. Yep. It's like, where are we going? Because I don't even know anymore. Like, it's just, there's too many different things and I have a hard time believing these all intersect. And again, I don't necessarily need them to intersect, but when you drop something for so long and then expect to come back to it and be like, I'm still interested. I don't know if that works.
You know, I put out a tweet this week. We are, I think, 5 years away from making a solid trilogy of superhero films being the sole goal. Mm-hmm. I don't think that the superhero genre bubble is going to burst. I think the connected universe bubble is going to burst. We're at 15 years now of storytelling. In this show, they reference the blip, which is an event that culminates with Iron Man, who's a character that's dead that was introduced in 2008. Mm-hmm. The weight of it, even for professionals like us, is becoming too grand. And what happens when there is all this world building and world connecting and world jumping to do is you wind up with performers like Ben Mendelsohn, who I think is one of the most exciting actors we have, being boring as fucking hell. And seems like he's sleepwalking through the fucking thing.
Yeah, everyone, there's a great cast in the show. And
amazing!
I think the only one that I'm actually semi-interested in, like in terms of what they're actually doing, is probably Samuel Jackson. But even then, it's kind of like he's not where he was in other projects. So... yeah. I don't even know what to feel about that. Who is this for? I don't know.
Well, like, conceptually... I mean, and you didn't watch Andor, but like there were reports going in that this was going to be the MCU's Andor, right? This was going to be a heady, boiled down, stripped back, real, whose side are you on type story. And based on part one of six, that couldn't be further from the truth. The dialogue would make Tony Gilroy's skin rip right off his body.
Yeah, it's very dry, I think, is like, because I've watched enough of Andor to know what it is. Again, I'm just really busy. I love that show. It is very good. But the
did you get to the jail stuff with Circus?
Yes.
Okay.
I think so. Yeah.
Like, bro, what are we talking about? That's storytelling of the highest order. That's fucking blasphemous to put this show in the same sentence as that one.
It is. Yeah. It's like the look of Andor is very like drab, but it's like done with purpose. This is a bleak world and these people are fighting for the return of hope. And this show is just like, we're going to be dark and gray. And it's like the MCU has done a similar idea to this, not Andor necessarily, but like the political thriller with fucking the Winter Soldier, right? And they did that in a way more stylistically interesting way. It's not exactly jumping off the screen colors or anything, but it's just like the paranoid thriller idea has been done and it was done very well there. And then you see this and it's just like, You're not selling me here. I mean, the last 10 minutes of this episode are pretty strong, in my opinion, when they're looking for the bombs. And I thought, oh, seeing these people walk behind things and then someone else jumps out and they're like smiling. It's like, that's really creepy and really interesting. But and then obviously there's a death. I don't know if we're going to spoil it, but there is a death that happens. And I was like, oh, wow, that was really well done. But I don't know.
I do not agree. But we
really.
Yeah. All right, let's move on, though, to the next big talking point of the episode, and that is the AI-generated intro. Now, Kate, I actually think that you are probably better prepared to speak to this than me because I feel like gaming might have been ahead of the curve on this one, or no? Like, has the gaming world been using this tech? What is the conversation around AI and gaming, or just the idea of a computer generating something?
Yeah, you're familiar with the game No Man's Sky, right?
Yeah.
That game... The whole pitch back then when it was coming out was, this is a procedurally generated world. That means this game is going to have infinite content. And then it came out and it was the most boring fucking thing in the world. At that time, nobody was scared of AI in this creative sense. They were like, oh, like that sounds really cool. That could be so awesome and interesting. And then you play it and like, it's just the same shit, just kind of like moved around in different places. And it was really boring. And they've gotten better over time, but it's actually because more people started working on it and doing handmade stuff in that game. So yeah, AI has always been a part of gaming and you know, populating worlds with trees and bushes and all kinds of stuff, but nothing to quite what we see here, where they have they've created the entire intro sequence using AI. And when you're looking at it, there's this weird thing that I've been seeing with AI videos where like everything is like constantly moving, like every little detail is moving and shifting and shaping. And like, I get it for
it looks like, have you ever seen Scary Movie 2 or 3 where, or the one that makes fun of the ring and the person has a swirl face in the photo and they're like, oh my God. They're like, no, it's fine. That's Jim. And then it cuts to the Jim, whatever. And his face is really like that. That is all AI art.
Yes, that's such a perfect description. Very niche description, but I love it.
That's what you come to Postgrad Pod for, baby.
It's the weirdest fucking thing. And even at the end of the intro sequence, I believe it's supposed to be Earth. There is a planet, and it's just a blob. It doesn't even look like anything. It's just a fucking sphere with no color. And it's like, what are we doing? Why?
I want to start. This is not my take. This is not the way that I feel. But in defense of it, the sell that they're trying to put out there is that they're trying to create the uncanny, unsettling feeling that comes with AI art and not knowing what's real or what's not, which is the theme of the show. I get that. But there is no reason you can't hire regular artists to do that.
I think that
the optics of this are just insane, right?
The timing is terrible.
First and foremost, we're days removed from the whole Flash thing. Okay.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if they could have predicted that or what, but the fact that this is all going down the same week, I like put up a meme where that like soldier shields someone from like knives. That's Marvel. They were like, don't worry, we got you, DC. Like, so there's that, right? There is the fact that Hollywood is currently on strike with the writers largely concerned about AI stealing their jobs. Okay, that's another terrible look. And then there's the fact that Marvel is usually at the fucking nexus of all these articles and reports about how VFX houses are overworked and underpaid. So you combine all of this, and it is just such a miscalculation that for a brand that's already struggling, this might honestly be enough for people to be like, fuck this. I doubt enough people have the balls to do so, but the reaction I think is stronger than Marvel probably thought it would be.
I want to know, there is like at least one, there's probably a few companies that do just strictly these like title sequences for TV shows, like Game of Thrones, True Detective, yada, yada, yada. And I know they've done some of these Marvel shows too. I want to know what the fuck they think, because I'm sure they're like, you've been hiring us for all your shows and now you go around and make this ugly piece of shit with AI. What the fuck's that about? Like, yeah. I don't know if there's any comments out there quite yet, but I'm sure there will be, because I mean, I think for better or worse, a lot of people look at those title sequences, like give or take, like the title sequence of a show can be like one of the best parts of a TV show. Like, you know, Sopranos, Daredevil, Game of Thrones, True Detective, like I said, Mad Men.
Don't fucking cite Thrones.
Listen,
don't steal Thrones fans' valor.
I'm sorry. House of the Dragon. I watched one episode of House of the Dragon. I can say that. So yeah, it's just like those are works of art, and you're just coming in here and you're like, fuck you. That's terrible. It's insulting.
Yeah, I mean, I will be fascinated to see sort of, I'm sure it's going to remain in the show, but like, you know, is this going to explode to the point where they put out a statement or, you know, I can believe it, but I don't want to.
especially it just feels like you've said, like there is assembly line for these kinds of productions. And you know, people at these car factories have been like, oh my God, the robots are going to take our jobs assembling these cars. Now it's like moving that way to the fucking entertainment that we love. And it's just not good. It's, again, if I can watch that and just be like, what, why does Nick Fury have two eye patches? Why does the planet have no like distinguishing like identifiers on it? What is happening? Why did you make it that way?
Yeah.
I don't know. It's a problem.
All right. And then the final thing that I want to touch on from the premiere is the ending. Now, if you've not seen the premiere episode of Secret Invasion, spoiler warning, spoiler warning, spoiler warning. This is your final warning. The episode ends with longtime MCU stalwart / red shirt background character Maria Hill apparently dying. We honestly don't know with a show like this. Kate, you said that you liked it. I did not at all. I think that the moment lacks any gravity due to my complaints about the script feeling very thin and very exposition heavy. Maria Hill was barely in the episode at all. we don't really know how she's thinking and feeling these days enough to have her sudden death really hit home. Sure. We know virtually nothing about her killer other than the fact that he's an evil Skrull. I feel that the technical way the scene was shot, much like the episode itself, felt weirdly muted and subdued and disjointed. And it also feels like a cheap way for Marvel to sell the show, to be like, hey, look, we killed somebody. It's serious. You better check this out. So I think thematically, emotionally, the idea of Maria Hill dying, thinking that her best friend, her ally, her boss, Nick Fury, killing her is very resonant and impactful. But the way it was executed was wildly, just like most of the show so far, wildly underwhelming.
Sure. Yeah, I can definitely get on board with that. That's what I was talking about, was just like Nick Fury killing her and she has to die thinking it was him. But ironically, now that you've said all of that, I thought about this already, but like, you think about Logan, Professor Xavier dies thinking Wolverine killed him because the bald Wolverine kills him.
Yes, but we have 15 plus years worth of knowing. Yeah.
That whole movie is like, there's a, you know, fractured relationship there already, and they're growing and connecting. And just at that scene before that, where they did the dinner table and they're happy, and then he tucks Xavier in, and then the last thing he sees is Wolverine comes in and Xavier saying some sweet things to him, and then, and it's like, oh
yeah,
fuck. Yeah, definitely not the same level of impact here with that. I it worked for me on some level, but I do think, like, I don't care. I saw someone call her a major character in the Marvel Universe. I'm like, she hasn't been in a fucking Marvel project since 2019, I'm pretty sure. Maybe.
Dude, give me a fucking break, dude. She's just there to be like, oh my God, Nick, what are we going to do?
Yeah, she's never been like a character. She's just there to like do action with Nick Fury. And like, you could not tell me any like actual like distinguishing qualities about her. I don't think there really are any.
Well, she's human and she likes the law.
Wow, that's a lot of characters in the Marvel Universe.
All right, so, I mean, Secret Invasion, I'm going to continue to watch because I enjoy it. You're going to continue to watch because I'm going to make you.
Yep.
Other than that, you know, I am holding out faith that it is going to rebound. I think that the cast is too good for it to remain entirely uncompelling. But in terms of, like, as I said, the cast, the comic book run that this is based on, the marketing, like you said, which was thematically strong, I was insanely let down by this. And it's a particular bummer considering the fact that it's off the heels of Guardians 3, when we were all like, oh fuck, you know, they could be back on course here. But now it feels like we're stuck in that same sort of treadmill of just straight mediocrity that the MCU has been stuck on for the last 2 years or so.
Yeah, it's a bummer. There's nothing here that jumps out as like, yeah, we need this story. This is what the MCU needed. This is a really different, like, yes, it feels different in the sense that it's just fucking boring and gray, but that's not a good different, right? It just feels like, I don't know, it lacks the energy that something like this needs. Like, I don't feel paranoid or scared for these characters. It just doesn't do anything for me.
All right, let's take another quick break, and then we're going to swing over to my interview with Asteroid City stars Scarlett Johansson and Jason Schwartzman.
All right, folks, if you can't already tell, today I am joined from left to right by Jason Schwartzman and Scarlett Johansson, the stars of Wes Anderson's new film, Asteroid City. Congrats on it, and thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you.
Scarlett, this is your first film with Wes, and Jason, I believe this is your eighth. Were there any moments where that divide in relative experience showed itself? Whether that be in a good or bad way? Because I imagine working on a Wes film has a very particular way of doing things in terms of tone and cadence and all that stuff.
Well, I had the opportunity to work a little bit with Wes before in Isle of Dogs. And so I was familiar with his directing style a little. I mean, obviously I don't have... I'm not playing a dog in this movie, but maybe in the next one.
Wait, what?
But no, but I, you know, I was aware of his sort of how he likes to communicate. And he also, is, you know, he has a certain, I think, musicality in his way of, you know, in the kind of intonation of his dialogue and how he hears it in his mind. And he gives performance notes that are both dramatic notes, and then also some of it is just for tempo and pacing and that kind of thing. And you know, he's very, very clear with his direction, and he is very engaging, and he loves actors, and he loves the process of how the scene develops over, you know, many, many takes. And I like that process too. I like to work a scene a lot. Mm-hmm. So it was great for me. And I don't know.
Same. I mean, even though it's different, two different, it's same. And that's what I love about it. And that's what it's like.
One of the main things I took notes of was most of your guys' scenes, particularly some of your most intimate scenes, take place in separate rooms, separated by, I don't know, 6-ish feet or so. What were some of the most unexpected challenges and rewarding parts of that?
Those damn flies.
The flies.
Remember those flies?
Great.
What
was that?
I don't know.
There was a
time of day, or when did they come?
You know, it's, I don't, they would come at the, yes.
Certain time of day.
You're right, time of day.
We had these black flies that infested the set. I don't know if it was like, you know, obviously it's something to do with like the temperature and the wind and the pressure of the air, whatever it is. And they would just come and it was, they were so loud and so annoying.
It was obscene. It was a lot. Attacked.
You would be completely kamikaze'd by these black flies.
And you would like try to do, like you would watch Scarlett do a scene and like a fly would like land on her nose. She's doing the scene and she's trying to be really professional and she's doing this incredible job, hoping the fly is going to leave. But at some point,
relentless.
It's pretty clear the fly is just like going to hang out there for a little bit. So then it's like, now do I do this scene? And it's just, well, it shows you how professional and great she is. That she would just keep going with the fly there. But these flies would, maybe it was a combination of that and they just get stuck on you. But it was like a joke. I mean, it was like a fly person came in.
Now I'll have to go back and rewatch to see if I could see what takes are fly takes and what takes aren't.
They're everywhere.
They're all over the place.
And they're loud.
I've got a rep here, but real quick, seeing your fantastic hairline, I'm curious, what was up with the shaved portion?
That was this, that was just Wes. We were talking about different like looks, and there was like a slight, like this slight receding kind of shaved idea. And then we were going to do it on both, but then he just kept one. And
As someone whose hairline is really receding, I could tell that one was fake. Thank you guys so much for your time today.
All right. Thank you to Scarlett and Jason for joining us this week. Thank you all for joining us this week as well. Make sure to follow Cade at Cade_Onder and myself at Eric_Ital and the podcast at PostgredPod. Please also follow us on Instagram and TikTok as I've been trying to grow those platforms. Next week, we will be back to talk Little Asteroid City, maybe a little Indiana Jones 5, and then, of course, Secret Invasion Episode 2. I am seeing Mission Impossible 7 next Wednesday, so since the embargo has dropped, I could also share some thoughts on that. And leave us a 5-star review on both Spotify and Apple Podcasts if you haven't already. We will talk to you next week. Peace.